Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 46 on Friday, June 5, 2009. This week I'm at home in Denver, which means that last night I had a chance to see the Canadian singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen in concert at our incomparable Red Rocks Outdoor Amphitheater, snuggled at the foothills of the Rockies. At 74, Cohen played for 3.5 hours with his band, and I had a chance to take it all in from a choice seat in the third row. If you don't know him, he's known for his poetic lyrics and a distinctly deep, gravelly voice and a zen-like presence on stage. It was really just fabulous. I realized this morning that it's the best concert I've been to since I saw the Beatles at Suffolk Downs in Boston on August 18th, 1966, just before my 16th birthday, so that's saying something. My guest this week is a lot younger than Leonard Cohen, but still has the benefit of many years in the book publishing industry, and that enables him to look at the Kindle and the ebook revolution with plenty of perspective. Our conversation went longer than usual, but I believe you'll want to hear the full presentation of his views on topics, including the $9.99 Kindle price point, where the as-yet-unknown killer app for the Kindle will come from, and why he thinks we've got a long way to go before this ebook thing really takes off. In Kindle news this week, the DX is coming. The DX is coming, due to ship next week. Mine should be here by Thursday. Also, Google throws down the gauntlet to challenge Amazon to a duel for dominance in online ebook sales. E-Ink has a new owner, and I found a way that you can spend another $500 on a Kindle accessory if you really have a desire for that. The tech tip is going to show you how to listen to this podcast and others on your Kindle. The Kindle quote this week is from the first Kindle book that I've purchased on my iPhone. I'll have comments from Carolyn and Linda Hopkins. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes Store or Zune Store, or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to this week's Kindle news. I first heard news that the Kindle DX was going to ship next week from Bob Withers, who sent me a tweet. Len Edgerly, did you notice that the Kindle DX product page now lists a release date of June 10? When I went to the Amazon site, sure enough, they had quietly changed the expected delivery from summer, sometime this summer, that could be anything up to Labor Day, to June 10th. So that's pretty exciting news. I put out a notice to the Kindled Spirits alert list based on Bob's information, so everybody got word pretty quickly ahead of most of the news on the internet. And also Bob's on that list too. So that, you know, if you want to get alerts like that, just send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com and I'll add you to the list. I had an indication that the supply of the Kindle DX may be pretty good because I realized that the credit card that I'd used to order mine the day it was announced, I had left at a restaurant in Hawaii and had to cancel. So I called Amazon and explained the situation, and the guy said, well, that's easy. All you have to do is cancel your order and make a new one. I immediately had visions of going to the bottom of a long line and having a real delay in getting my DX. But he said, no worries. You'll get it the same time that you would have under the original order, and that does seem to be the case. When I go in, I can see that it's going to be shipped on the 10th, and with overnight shipping, I should be getting it on the 11th. So it looks like you can go in right now and order a DX, and it'll be here next week sometime. And feel free to use the associates link that I've got on the on my show notes page, which is thekindlechronicles.com. If you click there on your way to Amazon to buy this, it provides a little revenue for me to help pay hosting costs and other costs related to the podcast. Next item in news is Google's indication that they plan to introduce a program that would enable publishers to sell digital versions of their newest books directly to consumers through Google. So that really lays down the gauntlet for Amazon. And Google is saying that they would allow publishers to set a suggested list price, but that Google would ultimately set consumer prices. This came out of This is a New York Times article that came out of Book Expo America, BEA, a big book industry conference recently held in New York. We'll have some more of some comment on that in our interview to get a feeling for, is this really a serious competitive threat looming for Amazon or not? Let's see. E-Ink is going to be purchased by a Taiwanese company for $215 million. That's Prime View International. And they are the ones that were already working with E-Ink to assemble the Kindle displays. So there's a relationship there. And the E-Ink spokesman, who is a guy that we interviewed for the podcast a while ago, Sri Paravumba, and he says that this is going to help speed up work on the color version of the E-Ink screen. So that's good news. $215 million purchase price. And he also said that the company is going to remain in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But that's in the category of, well, you've been acquired and nothing's going to change. We've been promised, just like Paul Biba pointed out last week, that usually isn't the case. Well, if your company's been acquired recently and you've got some extra cash for an expensive Kindle accessory, Paul Elgin has a prospect and an item at his thebookofkindle.com blog. He says that there's a product called OmniPage Professional 17 Scanner. And what this does is you can scan any document using optical character recognition software of the image and then email the Kindle formatted document to your Kindle. I checked out the product page for OmniPage Professional 17. Turns out it's made by Nuance. I'm sure that's the same company that does the text-to-speech for the Kindle. And the physical shipment price for this product is $499.99, so pretty close to $500. That's the Kindle news this week. This week's tech tip is a way to play this podcast or any other podcast on your Kindle. It's not a totally, the Kindle isn't really set up for ease of doing this, but it is sort of fun to realize that you can, and I'll walk you through the steps. The way to set this up, I'm going to use my podcast as an example, is to connect your Kindle to your computer using the USB cable. And once you do that, you'll see that one of the folders that appears is music. And if you go to my show notes page as an example, that's thekindlechronicles.com. At the end of every episode's show notes, there's an item that says click here to download this episode. And if you right click, or on a Mac that's control and click, those words, click here to download this episode, one of your options will be save link as. And this sets up a download to a folder. You need to navigate from that point to the folder on your desktop that is showing what's in the Kindle. So it's a little icon that says Kindle, and find that, and then find the music folder within that, and have the download go straight to that music folder. You could also download the file to your hard drive and then just drag the MP3 file for the podcast episode into the music folder on the Kindle. Once you've done that, you want to save. It take a while. I think the episode that I just did for last week was 50 megabytes, and it took, I don't know, maybe 2-3 minutes for it to transfer to the Kindle. Once it's there, you safely eject the Kindle icon from your computer and then unplug the USB cable so that you're back on your Kindle looking at the home screen. At this point, what you're going to do is go to the menu button on the right side of your Kindle, and you'll see under, when that comes up, you've got a section of the menu called Experimental. And so you move your scroll wheel or your five-way to select that. And the first item on the Kindle 2, I believe it's the same on the Kindle 1, is Basic Web. You want to go one down to Play MP3. Now, the way the Kindle is set up, and I got some help on this from a Kindle support guy just now. The idea here was really more about music, and if you drag several music files to the music folder on your Kindle, and then you start playing them, it's just going to automatically cycle through at random on various music, so that the idea being that you might be listening to music while you're reading your Kindle. But in the case of something you really want to listen to, you would want to just have one item in that folder, because otherwise you're going to be randomly hopping around till you get to the podcast. So on my Kindle now, the only file, MP3 file, in my music folder on the Kindle is the podcast for last week. And Play MP3 is now highlighted. There are a couple of ways that you can, if you just press at this point the Alt key and the space bar, it'll begin playing.
Last week, out the window from my study, I can see thunderheads forming out over the Rockies, but on the 16th.
And then if we press Alt space bar, then it pauses, and Alt space bar,
Street Mall, the trees.
It starts back up again at wherever you left off. So if you're in the middle of something and you want to stop, Alt pause, Alt space does the pause, and you can listen to the podcast. So that's how the tech tip for this week. I picked up some information on a web page, but it turned out it was wrong. They were suggesting dropping it into the Audible folder, and when I did that, my Kindle froze up and I had a lot of trouble. So this one I figured out on my own with the help of the Kindle support. Marian Maniker has recently begun writing a thorough and insightful column about the Kindle and the explosion of electronic publishing for thebigmoney.com. He worked in book publishing for many years, most recently as publisher for business imprints at HarperCollins. I talked to him by phone from his home in the suburbs of New York City on June 2nd. He told me that a benefit of retirement from the business was that he does not have to attend all of the book trade shows at Frankfurt and everywhere else anymore. So he wasn't at this year's recent Book Expo America when Google announced its intention to enter the digital book market by the end of the year. But he'd certainly heard about it, and here's how he reacted to that news.
With all things having to do with Google, and I think you even heard the quote from their representative saying, this time we mean it,
right.
You know, we'll see when it happens. Yes, it has an enormous potential, but throughout their history with the book business, Google has created a lot of conflict without necessarily generating a useful or meaningful business around books. I'm not saying they can't or won't, but so far they have not had the impact that the device has in relatively short order. Though it is interesting that someone has already made a engineering proof of concept demonstration of mating the e-ink display with Google's Android operating system, which suggests a device that would be very low power but have all the functionality of a cell phone. And if that is developed by any of the handset makers, you can begin to see a reading device that is much less of a web-oriented device, or at least a video-oriented device, and a lower-power reading device with sort of full functionality.
Hmm. Well, if you were advising Google in this venture, what kind of content would you help them to try to get on a store that they would offer that I assume would be in competition with Amazon's content offering?
My view of this goes across the board for all of the purveyors. I think for this to be fully successful, we need a new form of the content. All across the history of publishing, you get a different type of document or literary form to suit the dissemination of ideas. You know, you have epic poetry when you have someone who's actually needs to remember in rhythm and rhyme the story and tells it over a long evening. You get these large novels that are serialized in the 19th century. country when you have periodicals that support them and then allow them to be collected as the classic sort of triple-decker novel. You know, Thackeray's Vanity Fair is very much a piece of all of that. And, you know, in our own day, we've had a form of nonfiction writing that's emerged that has, you know, certain properties, I think, generated by the kind of consumer culture that we live in. So I think for the electronic readers, we need to see the emergence of some form of writing that is probably shorter than a book, longer than what's been available or continues to be available in periodicals, especially the way writing's gotten shorter. And is available for a price that the consumer wants, so that we're not getting into a conflict over pricing books. We're actually establishing a new item with its own expected price.
You had mentioned that Fortune is in talks with Amazon on some kind of content along these lines. Do you have any idea what would it be about?
I have no direct knowledge. That comes entirely from an offhand comment made in Fortune's own story about the Kindle. It was more of a full disclosure comment. But you can easily think for the newspapers and magazines that they have the writers, they have the editors and ideas that they would want to begin to develop content that would play to the strengths of their organizations, that would generate incremental revenue. This is especially true of, you know, the newspaper business. If you are the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, a large part of your staff has ambitions to generate additional income as a writer of books. And it becomes a huge distraction for those organizations. I believe the three of the major financial writers for the New York Times are currently writing books about the financial crisis, which means the editor of the financial section, the New York Times, has a couple holes in his roster. Wouldn't it make more sense for the New York Times, which desperately needs to increase its revenue, to do that kind of writing or produce that kind of writing through their own auspices and sell it off of their website or sell it through the Kindle themselves, thus creating the same amount of income for their writers as well as generating revenue for themselves, which they currently don't participate in when one of their writers goes off to write a book for HarperCollins, Random House, Holzbrink, and so on.
And for the readers, you'd have the prospect of getting a really in-depth view of the crisis and not having to wait for it to go through the process of a traditional book publishing.
Last night, someone told me that Michael Lewis's story about the end of Wall Street, which was the one significant piece of journalism to come out of Portfolio magazine, when it was put on Portfolio's website six, 8 months ago, it received 5 million hits.
Incredible.
Now, that is exactly the kind of combination of immediacy. As soon as he's done writing, you can disseminate it to a very large group of people. Now, 5 million hits isn't 5 million readers, and 5 million of the people didn't actually download it and make their way through it. But still, even if you cut that down, that's a significant number of readers. And to be able to do that quickly with a talented writer who can give you the depth of analysis, reporting, storytelling that is what people find so appealing about books should be an enormous opportunity rather than be viewed, you know, the way it has been, that, oh, the web is siphoning off readers and you don't get the advertising dollars from that. If you could shift that off of the web into a secure environment, like the Plastic Logic Reader, like the Kindle, like this Google system, it should be an enormous boon to journalism and to journalists.
Would you see content like that coming to readers on sort of a subscription basis or still paying per item?
This has to be worked out. I don't think you can project in the future what will happen. There are many potential ways this could arise. It now comes down to the individual actors in these fields, both on the technology side, but also on the content side, and how they price and promote this. What I know is we need a hit. All new products and services generate a distinctive hit of their own, and that will be one of the things that really gets people either, even if they already own the device, using one of these services. Does it make sense to sort of package it as a subscription? Of course. Do you want, if you're the New York Times, to add things that people can buy as a premium so that you can keep the bulk of the newspaper open to the 20 million unique visitors a month who come there while finding something to sell to them for $5, $8 on top of it? That's one strategy. Do you want to make it a something that you subscribe to, almost like a book club, and you get to choose one of the five items that are made available each month? That's another potential strategy. There are the straightforward book way of doing it, and then there's these periodical ways to do it. I don't think anyone knows. I think what will be exciting is when we get to the position where people can experiment with it. But as we've already seen, the newspapers are not embracing this technology the way one thinks they ought to be, in part because they're trying to protect their advertising readership base, and that's going to be a problem. You know, when the Kindle was announced, the DX, mm-hmm. Everyone thought Sulzberger was going to say something significant, and it turns out he didn't say anything significant at all about how that gets put together. The Times has an extraordinary piece of software called the Times Reader.
Yeah.
Why that they're not working with any of these devices makers to get that out as a platform is a mystery.
Do you think that, do you have any idea what their incentive deal with the DX is going to look like? When I guess the DX is going to start shipping pretty soon, so at some point
announced that their incentive deal would be a subsidy for the device in exchange for a multi-year commitment to a subscription only if you were in an area that you could not already get delivery of the New York Times. And to me, I think, what is that, Idaho, Montana?
Yeah,
I mean, where can't you get the New York Times delivered to you? Whereas I get the New York Times delivered for something like $500+ a year.
Yeah.
I don't mind paying that fee. And I really prefer not to have all the newspaper in the house. And I would think they could give me the device or sell me the device for $100 or $200 in exchange for, paying $300 or $400 a year just to get the newspaper, and I'd happily pay it. But the problem is there's no advertising on the device, and they don't want to lose the subscription rate base for their advertising. So, this always happens with companies. No one wants to give up their mm-hmm. business model for what might be a potential business model, but they haven't really found a way yet to say, let's take what we're good at and migrate that to another area. The magazines seem a little more enthusiastic about that, and we'll see, who emerges. When someone like Bob Woodward sells a book, it transcends the container it's in.
Mm-hmm.
That first week, if he's got great material, the book is what people get to first, not necessarily the newspaper story about what's in the book or the magazine excerpt or even him on television because it's so highly anticipated. People with that kind of clout, if they move over to things like the Kindle, or we get the reverse, where we get people who launch speculative stuff to see if it will find an audience on the Kindle that then publishers can follow up with, either putting it into the newspaper or magazine or putting it out in book form. Those are other ways that we could see this evolving.
Hmm. I'd like to talk a little about the $9.99 price. In reading some of the things you've written, it almost seems like those of us that are believing that is going to be the magic price, it's like believing in the tooth fairy, that the pricing is just a lot more complicated than that.
Well, look, Amazon made a choice, and you know, they are both smarter than I am and have data that I don't have, but it's still a mystery to me that they made this choice. They made a choice to sell the device for a fair amount of money, $359 for the Kindle 2, $489 for the DX, without a subsidy. And they made a big point of saying, there's no contract here, but what we're going to do, you're going to save the money because we're going to price ebooks so low. And they created this somewhat fictitious marketing concept of the $9.99 price, where, you know, a full 30% of the titles are actually sold for more than that. By the way, many are sold for much less because there are many, you know, titles that are a dollar or even, mm-hmm. you know, cost nothing on it. But they made that choice, and it requires a buyer who thinks, okay, my value is going to be in the content, not in the device. The cell phone model, where the device itself is subsidized or made cheaper to you, and you pay for the content often at, you know, somewhat, remember in the beginnings of cell phone use, the minutes were very expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, it is popularly known as sort of the Gillette or razor blade model, where you get the device for very little, but you pay a lot for the content and all. That is a valid way of viewing this. And of course, people who represent the content producers would prefer that sort of model because the content has a value all its own, and no two writers produce content of the same value. And if you look at book prices, you'll find there is no standard price for a book. Mm-hmm. It's not even really that much of a standard price for a magazine. I mean, it's around a couple of bucks, but several magazines are priced in different ways. But books especially, there are certain kinds of books that are priced below $20. There are books that are priced in the mid-20, you know, $2 to $24 range. There are books in the high 20s and even books in the $30, $35 range. Now, some of that is based on whether it's a big, thick book versus a small book, but that is not a direct correlation. They're not being priced off of the paper content. They're being priced off of the value of the words and the entertainment. So if you buy Alan Greenspan's book in hardcover, you're going to pay a lot of money for it. The perception with a book by a political figure, a business leader, something that's going to help you in managing your money and all, is that it should be more valuable to you, mm-hmm. and you'll pay a lot more for it. The same is true of history books and a lot of other serious nonfiction. On the other side, a book that's considered, you know, inspirational will generally be priced lower. So there's a variegated price structure out there based on the content, which really ought to be maintained. The only place where we get to somewhat standard prices are when you get to backlist books and paperback, the mass market paperbacks versus the trade paperbacks. And that's in part because those books often, you know, sit on a shelf for a while and they're bought, you know, one, you might choose one or the other, and if there's a price differential, you might choose one based on the price, not on whether you want to read that novel or that, you know, nonfiction book. If you project that forward into Kindle pricing, a book that is greatly in demand that people really want should be higher priced, not lower priced. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is one of the ironies of the book business is that discounting comes at the time of greatest demand, mm-hmm. when it should be the other way around. You should be selling a book that you want people to take a chance on and get interested in early on for a low price, and then when everyone wants to get their vampire novel, you should be able to raise the price and maximize your revenue from it. You know, you go to the movies, they don't lower the price on the opening weekend when everyone wants to see it. They've lowered the price. You can see a movie for half price 6 weeks later in some theaters that are structured that way. Mm-hmm. It's just one of the strange things about it. And part of that is the being able to ship large number of quantities. The economies of scale makes it easier to lower the price. With digital distribution, it should go the other way around. Mm-hmm. And that's a question of, what the consumer wants versus what the actual economics are. But I will say this, as much as consumers feel that information ought to be free, that books ought to be much cheaper, they don't seem to understand that the writers, the way they earn their living, has become seriously constrained. If you want to read journalism, if you want to read a novel, there's basically no other way for that writer to support themselves except from the direct sales of their content, which means content is going to have to be more expensive, or at least remain at the same price as costs get cut out and we move to digital distribution. By all rights, given the way the rest of the economy is going, the savings should not be going to the consumer. It needs to go to the writer.
The digital text platform where writers can put books up and they become Kindle editions, do you see that becoming a much more active space, especially for beginning writers that might want to just get some content out there and hope to find an audience?
I would think so, but you never know. I mean, we have seen over the last 20 years in book publishing, many, many more authors emerge from self-publishing. They, you know, people would write a book, get it printed up, sell it out of the trunk of their car, develop enough of a following to then get their book, the rights to their book, bought by a mainstream publisher. It's much easier to do that, at least on the production side, with the Kindle. And even the royalty structure isn't that bad. It's 35% of the list price, not the discounted price. So, you know, it ends up being you're splitting the revenue with Amazon after they apply their discount. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger issue is with electronic books is marketing. Since you have no physical book, you can't put it in your trunk. You have to generate a way for people to see it. That may be harder than printing up your own books.
I see.
So there's some logic to it, but it's not a foregone conclusion.
What do you make of the DX? Do you think that they will succeed in establishing that in the textbook area or not?
I'm not sure the DX is entirely about textbooks. I see the announcement of the DX as a way of stealing a little bit of thunder from any potential Apple announcement and from the Plastic Logic device, which is now seems very late to market because it's not coming out till, you know, January 2010,
right,
at least at last notice. And it looked like the DX was a slight upgrade, but not a big move forward. And I would say that the big issues with the DX, some of which play to the textbook market, are the native PDF reader and the size being able to handle the way that textbooks are designed, even though that screen still isn't the size of a sheet of paper. It is easier to see things that are set in two column, mm-hmm, and things that have charts and graphs to them. And I do know that they just announced that you can do... One of the big problems with the Kindle is that, you know, you take notes on it, but it stays in the Kindle. They've
right
now just announced a way to export those notes, mm-hmm, which I actually think, certainly for academic use, is a huge leap forward, but even for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think they have to keep experimenting. I think in many ways this last few months have gone better than anyone could have expected. The Kindle itself seemed nice and had a positive response. The Kindle 2 seems to have had a very strong response. I think it's in Amazon's interest to keep improving, keep proliferating different devices, keep expanding and experimenting, and then it's really not up to them to decide what takes off. It's, you know, the combination of forces out there that will either make it more of an institutional textbook device or a personal, reading device for people who want to read novels and, you know, consume, journalism or nonfiction.
Hmm. Do you think Apple is really going to take a run at this market too with whatever it's going to announce?
I wouldn't presume to guess. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like that's where they're going. And I do think the issue is less Apple, it's e-ink screens. Mm-hmm. I think the big divide here is between the low-power e-ink screens, which have many more applications than we've seen, and I think the great thing that's happened here is the success of the Kindle will draw a lot more people into this space, coming up with different sorts of devices. That's why that mating of the Android operating system, which is open source, with the e-ink screen is a big deal. It makes it much more possible, that cooler device that you saw reviewed recently makes much more possible for people like that to come up with more add-ons, more functionality, a greater set of devices, so that the right combination of features, we'll be able to see that. I mean, look, the truth of the matter is the e-ink isn't the great step forward. It was mating e-ink with wireless connectivity.
Yeah.
The wireless connectivity, that's the real killer app here. So I think that the e-ink with a wireless backup, it becomes one set of devices, whereas the backlit screen set to a cell phone and all with video and all, and considering the web has become much more of a video medium this year, becomes another set of devices, and we get a little bit of a splitting off, bifurcating of this world.
Well, and that gets to, I liked those 3 points that you said to explain the appeal of the book, intimacy, connection, and understanding. Do you see those two rival platforms emerging, one having an advantage in serving the needs, those three needs, the way the traditional book has?
Well, I think the e-ink, the combination of e-ink and wireless connectivity is the new book, and it plays to the strengths of what a book can do. It, just as that screen sips power and allows you to have a device that doesn't need to be recharged for a week at a time, the efficiency of communicating through print is unrivaled. You see it sometimes even on the web, where you'll see the transcript of a video. You'll see the video itself and then the transcript right next to it. There's next to nothing there. Video takes a lot to produce. It takes a lot to edit.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually convey that much in terms of information. It conveys a great deal in terms of atmospherics and a sense of understanding who the person is that's talking, or the place, because you get to see it for yourself and make your own decision. Conversely, writing carries much more information in a much more efficient way. And I don't think one of these things replaces the other. I think they become the way things were a few years ago, where you watched the television news for one thing, and mm-hmm. it provided, you watch the president on TV give a speech. You don't read it in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to learn about the complexity of the GM bankruptcy, you're going to read the newspaper story, because there's going to be so much more in there.
I saw a tweet, somebody who had been at the Expo was Todd Satterston, saying electronic books have been a major discussion point in every conversation I've had at BEA. It has tipped, buckle in for the ride. Is that kind of your feeling, that we're just this really is the year that the whole thing changed?
Don't bet on that. I mean, I still remember when CD-ROMs were going to transform the business, right? The problem with the publishing industry in general is everyone talks about the next big thing, but they actually don't buckle down and focus on producing it.
Uh-huh.
It's very much a me-too business. We always get, if there's vampire novels, we get hundreds of vampire novels.
Yeah.
Yes, everyone is hearing about the stuff having to do with the Kindle, but there is a great deal more work to go just proliferating the service. There's even more work in generating content for it. And so far, publishers haven't shown themselves to be leaders in generating that new content. There are a couple of experiments going on, but I would suggest that journalism has, for a number of different reasons, has a greater shot at creating the kind of killer app that you have to get on your Kindle than publishers do, mostly because publishing is organized as an industry around delivering books to bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, all the other functions were split off. The creative functions of taking an idea and turning it into something else, another format. So in many ways, I think publishers don't have the advantage going forward. Agents may have the advantage, but agents have their own, you know, problems in figuring out how to exploit all of this stuff next. So I think, yes, everyone's talking about it. But I don't necessarily think that we're anywhere near the takeoff on this. I think we're still at the dial-up access stage that we were with the internet in the early 90s. And if you look at the web now and think back to the frustrations we went through over 15 years, think about the amount of time it took
exactly.
to realize the original vision of the internet that was being broadcast in the mid to late 90s. It only really came to pass 10 years later.
Yeah, that's right.
And, right. Remember, you needed broadband access to make many of those things happen, but broadband access didn't happen in 99 and 2000. It happened in 2003, 2004, and many what could have been successful companies died in 2001, 2002 because there wasn't that access everywhere. I think the same is going to be true with writing journalism, the Kindle. We've got a long way to go before this really takes off. And I don't think it supplants the book business. I don't think it replaces books. It may cut down on the number of books that get published, which would be an enormous boon to the publishing industry. It may change other things, but it doesn't obviate the book entirely. I still remember conversations in 92 where people said, you know, don't buy Blockbuster stock because, you know, we're going to have, you know, delivery of movies via the information superhighway in a few years.
Yeah.
Well, here it is 17 years later. We've had pay-per-view all that time. We still mostly get our movies mailed to us in a disc
right.
or from a video store. Just because you can see that it ought to happen doesn't mean it will happen or that the economics of building an industry are there.
I want to thank Marion for taking the time to do the interview, and I'd recommend that you check out his new Kindle-related column at thebigmoney.com. I'll have a link in the show notes. This week I was at a meeting and a friend of mine said, I came across a book that made me think of you, and he mentioned it. It's a book titled George Being George, George Plimpton's Life as Told, Admired, Deplored, and Envied by 200 friends, relatives, lovers, acquaintances, rivals, and a few unappreciative observers, edited by Nelson W. Aldrich. Well, I had a few minutes before the meeting started, and I had my iPhone, and I hadn't actually used the iPhone Kindle app to buy a book yet. So I thought, well, this will be kind of fun. So I went in, found the book, was kind of surprised it was there. It cost $16, so it was way over the $9.99 price. But I had a feeling this friend of mine knows me pretty well, and I thought this is a good tip, and I'll swallow my whatever and order it. So I go into the Kindle app and buy the book, and I've got a choice to download it to the iPhone itself or to my Kindle, which shows up there with the name. So I downloaded it to my Kindle, and then when I got home later that morning, I opened up my Kindle, and there was the book. So I don't know. This one of these aspects of having a Kindle that never fails to delight me to have someone recommend a book, and then within minutes, it would have been one thing if I'd had the Kindle there, but somehow to do it via the iPhone made it even more amazing. So in honor of that little epiphany and fun thing, I'll read the first couple of items from this recollection. Now, George Plimpton was a guy who wrote The Paper Lion, and he was also a real literary figure, longtime editor of the Paris Review, which was an English literary magazine based in Paris. So it starts out with someone named Buddy Berniski. I don't know whether most people have a yearning for ecstatic experience, but George certainly did, and it was no secret. You saw it most sensationally in his love of fireworks. He really did live a life punctuated by fireworks, his fireworks, which produced ecstatic ohs and ahs, but then instead of burning out, would somehow generate the energy for another explosion. Ecstasy after ecstasy. But again, there was nothing secretive about this great appetite of his. He wanted to share it with as many of his friends as possible. I remember watching him in the Hamptons at a 4th of July picnic. That's when George seemed to me most at peace. He was just, look at this. Golly, this is marvelous. That's the Kindle quote this week from George Being George, edited by Nelson W. Aldrich. Time now for your comments. Carolyn, who has a Kindle One, writes, I have suggested this to Amazon many times and had no response. For those of us who wish to have all the books we downloaded on our Kindle, Amazon needs to create a new search capability. After I read a book, I move it to my 4 GB memory chip. But when I pull the table of comments, she mistakenly referred to the table of comments in her email, but when I wrote back, she said she was meaning to refer to the home button. So when she's got her books onto the SD card, which is available in the Kindle One, not the Kindle Two, she hits the home button and every single book is there, and I have to wade through many pages to find the one I want. They need to make a search that will have books only on Kindle unread, or they need to provide the capability to make folders and subfolders. This doesn't seem like such a huge software challenge. So, you know, Carolyn's plea for folders echoes the number one question for Ian Fried, that's the Kindle vice president at Amazon, that I collected in response this week to a question that I put out to the Kindled Spirits email list. And what's happened is I had a promising exchange of email with Amazon's director of communications, who asked me to forward him a sample list of questions for a possible interview with Ian, perhaps next week, timed with the shipment of the Kindle DX. I got a ton of answers back. I want to thank everyone who sent me questions. I'm going to have another great list of substantive issues to discuss with Ian if I do get a chance to visit with him by phone. Last time I talked to him, which was on February 8th, I was impressed with his directness and clarity in response to the long list of questions that were submitted by listeners at that point. So I'm pretty hopeful that I'm going to have this chance at the interview. And you know, this business of folders, it came up, way more often than any other single issue. So when I asked him about it last time, his answer was, we were so focused on keeping the Kindle simple for a broad range of readers that a suggestion like this poses a real challenge to make sure that it's simple enough to satisfy the needs of people, perhaps like the people who listen to this podcast mainly, but also people who are much less willing to put up with anything that keeps the Kindle from being simple. So we'll see what he has to say if we get a chance to talk to him next week. Second comment is from Linda Hopkins, longtime listener. She writes, Hi Len, I'm forwarding the answer I received from Kindle customer support regarding whether there are limitations to the number of annotations you can have in a Kindle book. See below. So this refers to an item that we had a week or two ago from a listener who had heard really just the opposite, that in one case they had gotten word that there were no more highlights available, and someone at Kindle support had said, yeah, an author can limit that if they choose to. But this Kindle support person said, hello, I'm sorry for any misunderstanding. There is no limit to the number of annotations, notes, and marks you can have on your Kindle book when reading in the Kindle One and Kindle Two. So I guess I'd be curious if anybody else had had that listener's experience of trying to do some highlighting, and because you'd done a certain amount of highlighting, you got a note on your Kindle saying, sorry, your highlighting options are up. If you'd like to send me a comment, please do. I really love hearing from you with questions or thoughts. You can send text comments to the Kindle, that's at podchronicles@gmail.com is the email to send me comments at. You can also leave them at the show notes page, which is thekindlechronicles.com.
Yeah, you can also leave an audio comment. I love hearing people's voices, listeners, and if you'd like to try that, I'd really urge you to leave a fairly short comment, a minute or two. And the way you do it is call 206-666-2713, and then you'll have a chance to record a message, which I can play on a future podcast. If you'd... All right, there we are in the half hour. If you'd like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. As I said before, that's where I get questions for interviews sometimes, and also I put up information. Every time I post a new episode, I send out an email right away to everyone on the list so that they get the first word that there's a new episode up. As I said, next week I'm crossing my fingers in hopes I'll be talking to Ian Fried in connection with the shipping date for the Kindle DX, but we'll see how that turns out, and I probably better have somebody else queued up as a possibility if I don't have a chance to talk to Ian in time for the show on Friday. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.